Chapter 3. The Washers, the Rower, and the Road. Friday, the 3rd of March, 1191. It was around 100 days before the hooded archer would storm Nottingham Castle and ask his question. Far, far away from the city, in a small coastal settlement, Evelyn and Fay were laughing. They'd been making each other laugh for the last 37 years. They'd been best friends since girlhood, neither one of them having left the village of their birth, and they had now reached the very respectable age of 42. Evelyn and Fay had both got married, not to great men, but good men. They each had given birth to 7 children, and, much to their good fortune, both had 6 that were still alive. They each had a son in the Holy Land chasing the Lionheart's dream. People used to say that their lives were so similar they must be twins who'd just happened to be born of different mothers. They even had the same daily routine. Every day, just after sunrise, they'd meet on the pretense of helping each other with their chores. They'd sit outside their homes on 2 rickety stools and gossip. Today was Friday, laundry day. They'd already completed an ashing and scrubbing, and now a mountain of assorted garments was soaking in 2 large basins of water at their feet, steam still rising off them in the mid-morning chill. When they'd done this as girls, they had pretended to be witches.
Sock of father, pant of mar, oozes of sisters with pot-mark scar.
Fay's mother, a very pious woman, had come out screaming,
"Girls, pat that in right now. Satan is always watching, always watching."
Evelyn had muttered, "Dirty sod," and it had taken all of Fay's energy to stifle her laughter. It was remembering this childhood frolic that had caused the 2 women, now the same age as Fay's mother had been then, to break into a fresh bout of girlish giggles. As they drained their basins and began their walk down to the beach, they would lay their linens on the flat rocks to dry. Talk turned to more adult and marital musings.
"So I says to him, 'If you think I'm still doing that like with my back, you need to start going to church again and praying for a blooming miracle,'" Fay recounted.
"Oh, speak for yourself, dear. I'm still as flexible as an adder," Evelyn said with a wink. They both hooted in harmony, the way only true friends can.
So strong was their mirth, only intensified by Evelyn's graphic mime of her serpentine vigour, that neither of them noticed the soft crunch of a small boat hitting the pebble beach.
"That's why I'm glad to be gone of Roderick and Kev. We'd be down here with twice as much washing if they weren't off crusading, filthy buggers."
Fay slapped down a pair of wet undergarments for emphasis.
"Help."
It wasn't a whisper. It was just as loud as he could manage. Still, if the 2 women had been one of their louder bouts of humour, they might not have heard the man in the buffalo hide boat. Their heads spun in unison and their eyes fell upon a bizarre sight. The boat was small. It could have only seated 2 comfortably, 3 at a push. Long and thin, shaped almost like a half-splayed peapod. Neither of them recognised the deep red of the wood, nor the markings carved into its side. It was as alien as the man lying in it. The man's skin was dark, his eyes grey, and his lips blew from the cold of the ocean. His long hair was a thick nest of matted black snakes, decorated with beads, wrappings, and feathers. The clothing that draped his fit, if malnourished, frame was all made of the same tanned animal hide. It was decorated with similar markings to those on the boat, but they were printed in the most vivid dyes. The man's hands, still gripping the single oar of the vessel, were bleeding freely. Ugly calluses had formed from weeks of fresh blisters being torn open by the force of rowing against the sea. His face was hard to read. He stood up slowly, his whole body shaking from both cold and exhaustion. His hands opened, and the oar clattered into the odd-looking boat. He stepped forward towards them. Evelyn and Fay had stopped laughing. This man looked strange. He put 1 foot onto dry land. He looked down, then out to sea, then back at Evelyn and Fay. He smiled. That was a lot further than I thought. He fainted, a grin still etched on his blue lips as he collapsed onto the beach. The two old friends wordlessly ran forward to help. Gory, a youth of 13, watched slack-jawed as his mother and Faye brought the stranger towards their house. What was he wearing? What was in his hair? Why did he look so gory? "Quit your gawping," yelled Evelyn. "Get down from that napping tree and help us get him inside." Gory jumped down and ran to the trio. "Who is he, ma'am?" Gory asked, grabbing the man under the shoulder. "We haven't the foggiest. Once we've got him inside, go and get the others and pull his boat up to shore. Take everything out of it first and bring it all back here." Gory was delighted with the responsibility. With Kevin Roderick gone, he was now the oldest of the remaining children. He helped his mother lay the man down on his father's bed by the fire and then ran out to rally his troops. Within minutes, Gory and 9 other children, ranging in age from 4 to 12, were all tearing down the pebble beach. "How are we to know his boat?" asked Luena, the second eldest child there, at 12 3/4. Even though Gory was now the oldest child at home, Luena knew that she was much more mature. "Mam said we can't miss it. Said it's strange," explained Gory, slightly frustrated at being questioned by a subordinate. "I hope this is important as you making out. I was halfway through dyeing the clothes for market," Luena protested. "It's important." When they arrived on the beach, they spotted it immediately. The young children pulled out everything they could find from inside the boat. The oar, a bag containing what looked like salt beef, but with a stronger smell. A roll of leather, which when unfurled, had a number of painted dots on it. And a long pole with a jagged piece of stone on the end. The older ones formed a team, grabbing the strange boat and pulling it up the beach, away from the encroaching sea. Before returning to the matriarchs, they enjoyed the fruits of their labour. They all tried a small bite of the unfamiliar meat, had a go throwing the stone spear, and had a guess at what the leather roll might be. "It's writing," said Mason confidently. "How would you know? You can't read," retorted his older brother, Keswick.
"It's music. I've seen a bard with dotted parchment like this," insisted Tamsin.
"It's stars," said the youngest Ruth,
more to herself than the others. No one listened to her, even though she was absolutely correct. It's never easy being the youngest. Adam awoke with a start. The ground wasn't moving. He could hear water, but it was distant. He was indoors, in a room, on dry land. In the middle of the room, a welcoming fire was burning away, the hole above letting the smoke out and revealing a blue sky. He had made it. Adam tried to cheer, but all that came out was a horrible rasp. He raised his hand to his mouth and found that his palms had been carefully wrapped in damp strips of fabric. It felt soothing. A woman came bustling in. She had a kind face, but that didn't matter. After so long at sea, Adam would have been happy to see anyone, even Satan himself.
"You're awake," she said,
heading towards the fire where a large cooking pot was happily burbling away. She spooned a scoop of whatever was in the pot into a wooden bowl, then brought it to Adam, along with a water skin.
"Starch and water. You'll be needing both a plenty. We tried to get you to drink best we could, but most of it ended up down your front."
She helped Adam to prop himself up as he drank deeply from the skin.
"Cornish. Good," said Adam, in Cornish. "I was worried I might have overshot and ended up in Scotland."
"No, my lover, you're at Penwith, Cornwall."
She took the now empty skin, handing him the bowl.
"Thank you for your kindness," splattered Adam, his mouth half full. "I'm afraid my Cornish is a little rusty."
"Sounds all right to me," said the woman. "Funny accent, though."
The food was delicious. After weeks of nothing but raw fish and salted buffalo, to have something warm, and with vegetables no less, was a veritable feast. Adam could have cleaned out the whole pot. He would have,
were he not interrupted by a small face at the doorway, who, on noticing he was awake, gave a little squeal of excitement and disappeared as quickly as she'd arrived.
"He's awake! He's awake!"
Adam heard her cry as she ran around outside to raise the alarm. He turned back to look at his host. The woman with the kind face smiled and raised her brow.
"You've been the subject of many a mealtime speculation."
"How long have I been asleep?" Adam asked.
"About a day and a half. I'm Evelyn, and this is my home. What should we call you?"
She retrieved a stack of wooden bowls similar to the ones she'd given Adam from a corner of the room. "Timkasa," Adam replied automatically. It had been his name for the last few years.
"Eh?"
Evelyn looked at him quizzically. "That's my family's name. My name is Adam. Please call me Adam." It was a strange sensation to speak his true name again. Adam didn't have too long to dwell on this, as 10 children all rushed in at once, the little girl who popped in earlier leading the charge. They all stared at him, fascinated.
"Hello," said Adam.
The children took him in, seemingly not sure what to do next.
"You're not Cornish, are you?" the oldest boy asked as politely as he could.
"No," grinned Adam. The little girl stepped forward and asked in a very small voice,
"Where did you come from?"
"I came from a land across the sea." Adam told stories throughout the meal. Each child held a bowl of food in their hands, which would have gone untouched if Evelyn hadn't reminded them all to eat. Adam told them about the people he'd been living with across the sea, men and women who lived in tents, did dances to make it rain, and smoked a leaf that allowed you to see and talk to the dead. In the afternoon, Evelyn and the older children left to complete their various chores while the little ones stayed with Adam. He managed to pull himself off his bed, sitting with them in a circle round the fire. There they learnt about how raven stole crow's potlatch, and how spider taught man to catch dreams. Adam had picked up a little fireside showmanship over the years. Whenever there was a point of heightened drama he needed to emphasize, he flung a little powder from a pouch tied to his braided belt into the flames. The resulting bang and changing colour was always met with a series of immensely satisfying gasps. As darkness fell, the older children and Evelyn, Fay, and their husbands Ralph and Caden returned. Fay seemed just as welcoming as Evelyn. Caden seemed jolly, his large auburn beard and bright blue eyes reminding Adam of someone he'd once met in Norway. Ralph was the only one who seemed a little grumpy, but then Adam had been sleeping in his bed these last two nights. Evelyn noted that Ralph had squeezed Adam's hands in greeting slightly harder than necessary. She was about to protest when she saw that the wrappings that bound his wounds were gone. The blisters that had still looked so raw the day before were almost healed. Adam caught her looking and smiled. Evelyn gave him a small nod and decided it was best to leave well alone. After the evening meal, 5 of the children left to sleep in the home over the way, the remaining 5 curling up around the dwindling fire. The adults, not wanting to wake them, went outside to continue their chat. This was Adam's first attempt at walking, and it was slow going. Caden excused himself, but returned a few moments later with a large brown bottle.
"Cider," he pronounced with a grin, passing the bottle to Adam, who took a large swig. "Cornish cider. Nothing finer," Adam said, smacking his lips. "Brewed it myself," Caden said, blushing a little.
Ralph took a deep drink before asking in a slightly formal tone, "So, what is your purpose here?" Evelyn gave Ralph one of her warning looks.
"It's all right," chuckled Adam. "If I'm honest, I'm surprised not to have been asked sooner. Don't worry, Ralph. If I could just have one more night in your home, I'll be off tomorrow."
"Off tomorrow?" exclaimed Fay with a start. "You can barely walk."
Evelyn stayed quiet, remembering Adam's hands.
"Where are you headed then?" Caden cut in.
"Nottingham," said Adam.
"Oh, Ralph gave a long exhale. Ooh, that's a way. Dangerous road from here to Nottingham, you dress like that. The cutthroats and outlaws would be on you in an heartbeat.
You're right, Ralph, said Evelyn. We'll have to give him some of your clothes, help him fit in. It was not a request, and Ralph didn't argue.
The next morning, Adam woke up still in Ralph's bed. He was met with the stare of its usual owner, who was watching him from a hard wooden chair, clutching a bundle of clothes. After a hearty breakfast, Adam was left alone to change. He laid out his new clothes on the bed. A dark, greeny-brown tunic with a wine-red hood and an old pair of leather boots Ralph had been persuaded to part with. Adam slowly got dressed. He kept on his buffalo hide trousers and his braided belt, but, with a little sorrow, left his beaded vest. It had taken him so long to sew. He slipped on the boots, battered but comfy, and wiggled into the tunic. Finally, he pulled up the hood over his head. The four adults and 10 children were all there to wave him off. Each of the children gave him a small piece of food for the journey.
"Sorry about the colour," said the oldest girl, nodding to the hood. "We messed up the dyeing on the day you arrived."
"I like the red," Adam said to her. "It's cheerful."
"Just one more thing to do," said Evelyn, advancing on him rather menacingly, clutching a pair of iron sheep clippers. "Now, I'm sorry if you're not happy with the results. I've never had to cut hair like yours afore," Evelyn said, as she began to snip off Adam's long, dark snakes.
"That's quite all right. Just mind my ears. I am particularly fond of my ears."
After a quick shearing, the families were satisfied that Adam looked as inconspicuous as possible.
"I'd keep my hood up if I were you, lad," suggested Caden. "A dark face will warrant some questioning. I've heard they can be a bit funny up north."
Adam thanked them all in turn before gathering up the children's offering in a small Hessian sack. He finally turned to the two women who had found him half dead on the beach 3 days ago.
"Thank you, Lady Evelyn. Lady Fay, songs shall be sung of your kindness."
He kissed each of them on the hand.
"Flattery will get you nowhere, boy," said Fay, blushing a little.
"Since when?" laughed Evelyn.
"Now, you stay safe, and if you start feeling faint, you come straight back. We didn't save your life only for you to die on the road."
"I haven't died yet." And with a little bow, Adam turned heel, and without limp or stumble, began his long walk north. Despite the dire warnings about the road to Nottingham, the majority of Adam's journey was relatively uneventful. He spent most nights sleeping under the stars. A few kind souls let him stay with them, and one or two inns let him sing for his supper. He couldn't take any modern requests, but a few of the old ballads he knew from his last trip to the island seemed to stir some almost forgotten memories in the patrons. The landlord at the King's Arms was most pleased, and even slipped Adam some coin. It had now been a couple of weeks since leaving the hospitality of Fay and Evelyn. All his wounds and aches and pains were fully healed, and the body that had been so malnourished was now well and strong and ready. Adam felt hopeful that he might be getting close. He walked over the brow of a hill and saw a vast forest stretching out in front of him. Just before the woods, the road forked. This was not the first fork he'd come to, but so far Nike had been smiling on him. A peddler, a farmer, a hermit, Adam had asked everyone he'd passed if he was on the right path, and so far the locals' directions had served him well. But his last encounter had been yesterday afternoon with a theatre troupe, and none of them had mentioned the forest or this fork in the road.
"Lost, sir?"
came a voice from the trees behind him. The voice was young and male, two characteristics which usually meant someone spoiling for a fight. Adam whipped round to see a boy of about 13 lazily reclining on a high branch. The youth had long chestnut hair in desperate need of a wash. His clothes were an odd assortment of garments, some fresh and fine, others worn to a ravelling.
"Is it that obvious?" Adam replied.
"Oh, yes, sir," the youth grinned. "Dangerous place to get lost, sir, especially for a foreigner."
This boy was nobody's fool.
He swung his legs down and gracefully leapt from the tree, landing with a roll. Adam was impressed. "Is that so, young sir?"
"Will."
Will stretched out his arms and bowed low. Adam saw that the boy was missing two fingers on his left hand. Clean cuts. Adam thought he knew where this transaction was headed and was keen to hurry it to completion. "Well, if it's truly so dangerous, I think I might be in need of a guide."
"Well, sir, today's your lucky day. I'm the best guide this country ever saw. I cost a little more, but I'll get you to your destination."
Will grinned broadly and bowed even lower.
"Where we to?"
"Nottingham," said Adam. Will winked, clicked his fingers, and gestured towards the right fork. And with that, Adam and his new guide took their first steps into Sherwood Forest.
You've been listening to Evergreen,
Chapter 3,
written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed it, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a like and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really liked it, you can support this project on our Ko-fi page. All the details are available on our Twitter, @evergreenbook1.
The next chapter comes out on Monday, the 12th of July.
Thanks for listening.